Hello, and welcome to the recording of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Thursday, August 20th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier predicts a mostly cloudy day with a high of 84 and a low of 57 tonight. On the lead article on the front page, Teachers Union sues Governor. Governor's push to reopen schools descends into chaos. The story filed by Ryan Foley of the Associated Press. And it opens with a photograph of our governor wearing a mask and standing next to a large map of Iowa. And the caption says, Governor Kim Reynolds discusses the state's guidance for returning to school in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak during a press conference on July 30th in Des Moines, Iowa City. An aggressive push by Iowa's pro-Trump governor to reopen schools amid a worsening coronavirus outbreak has descended into chaos, with some districts and teachers rebelling and experts calling the scientific benchmarks used by the state arbitrary and unsafe. The clash has illustrated in condensed form the tension between science and politics and between economic concerns and health fears. That has characterized the nation's response to the outbreak from the White House on down. The virus has devastated the U.S. economy and killed over 170,000 Americans. Quote, we're about to see a tragedy occur in the state, and there's not a lot we can do about it. That's frightening, said Sarah Ann Whitlett of Ames, a parent and former math tutor who runs a website tracking state infection data. At issue is Governor Kim Reynolds' mandate in July that districts offer at least 50% classroom instruction. The conflict and test intensified Wednesday when the statewide teachers union announced a lawsuit challenging the governor's ability to make such decisions for local districts. The Iowa City School Board, which like many others had planned to start the year fully online, voted to join the lawsuit. In her order, the governor said districts where 15% or more of coronavirus tests were positive over the prior 14 days can request permission to move to online instruction for 2 weeks at a time. Health experts say Reynolds' 15% threshold is not based on science and is three times higher than what the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention suggests is safe. The Surgeon General has recommended a 10% limit. States and local districts have set widely varying thresholds for reopening schools, but Iowa is among the highest anywhere. They decided they wanted to open schools and then set the threshold, rather than deciding what's safe and meeting that target. They did it backwards, said Eli Perenchevich, an infection disease expert at the University of Iowa. By contrast, New York City says schools can reopen if positivity rates are below 3%. Arizona has put its rate at 7%. Perenchevich and others warn it will only be a matter of time before Iowa educators, students, and their families face illness and death in growing outbreaks. About 500,000 students are preparing to begin school in the coming days. Reynolds has dismissed the health warnings as scare tactics, and echoing President Donald Trump, argued children infrequently get seriously ill from or transmit the virus. She has said schools need to open for children's benefits and so parents can go to work. Quote, education is fundamental to the well-being of our children, and our teachers are essential to ensuring our school kids return to learn rather than mark time and lose ground, she said. We can do this safely. Reynolds noted one of her daughters will be teaching in-person classes, and eight of her grandchildren will be going to school this fall. Since her order, Iowa's outbreak has only gotten worse. Its per capita cases are the highest in the Midwest. The number of patients now in the hospital has increased to nearly 300. Deaths surpassed 1,000 Wednesday, and dozens of nursing homes are suffering outbreaks. The governor has refused to order the wearing of masks statewide. As of Wednesday, only a few districts across the state would qualify to request a waiver under the state's calculations. Making matters worse, the data the state are using to calculate local positivity rates have been flawed. The Fort Dodge district this week said its positivity rate looked grimmer than it really was because a clinic failed to report up to 3,000 negative cases. Other school districts are seeing worse outbreaks than the state's data would indicate. Reynolds' office announced Wednesday that it is fixing a major flaw in the data that unintentionally backdated thousands of negative and positive test results, which will lower or raise each county's 14-day positivity rate. Thomas Tsai, a health policy researcher at Harvard, called Iowa's 15% threshold arbitrary and said it was made worse by the data problems. He said Iowa is among the states rushing to reopen schools despite not having the virus contained, while others that could safely reopen them haven't done so. You are seeing both extremes, he said. The governor's order also required school districts to give parents the option of choosing online-only education, and many have agonized over what to do. A storm that damaged school buildings across the state last week with 100-mile-per-hour winds dealt another blow, and many districts have delayed their start dates so they can clean up and make repairs. But it also highlighted the friendly relationship between Reynolds and Trump, who traveled to Iowa on Tuesday to discuss the damage with the governor. Business groups have backed her in her move to reopen schools. Democratic lawmakers and school officials have mostly lined up against her. Quote, I feel the governor is misinterpreting that law, said Iowa City School Board member J.P. Clausen, who said the state's metrics don't seem designed to keep our staff and students safe. The governor has warned administrators who defied the state should face discipline against their licenses. In addition, the state said schools moving to 100% virtual instruction will not be allowed to offer sports or other activities. That could put pressure on administrators to keep classrooms open even when outbreaks occur. Under pressure, some districts, including Iowa City, have decided on a hybrid arrangement in which students will go to class 2 or 3 days per week. But in the Des Moines district, the state's largest school system, is still pushing back against the state, despite the county's positivity rate well below 15%. The school board intends to begin next month in an online-only format, but allow sports and other extracurricular activities. Bus drivers preparing for new school year with plenty of COVID-19 precautions. And we see a photograph of a bus driver cleaning the interior of her bus. Waterloo. Cedar Valley bus drivers are gearing up for the school year with some new routines intended to protect students and themselves from COVID-19. Drivers and students will be wearing face coverings. Riders will be assigned places to sit, and seats will be disinfected after each route. Buses are on the streets in Waterloo and Cedar Falls Community School Districts as drivers practice where they'll be going every morning and afternoon before Monday's start of classes. That includes 70 drivers on Waterloo Schools routes and 42 driving for Cedar Falls Schools. Sam Barrett, General Manager of Waterloo Bus Contractor Durham School Services, applauded drivers' willingness to do the job despite the possibility of being exposed to the coronavirus. Quote, it does take courage for a bus driver to come here and do this work, he said. There is concern with these drivers, and rightfully so. A lot of the other drivers are fearful. Officials are doing their best to limit any spread by students who get on the bus and could have the virus. Quote, each student has to wear a mask upon entering, Barrett noted. We won't be taking temperatures. Distance will be maintained between students on the bus when reasonable. Quote, in the school's eyes, it's not reasonable to socially distance on a bus, he said, adding that the buses won't be full. The intent will be to have a seat or two between students. We have the safety of the students and the bus drivers in mind every day. A chart with the assigned seats for each route will be given to the schools in Cedar Falls, said Scott Blair, the district's transportation director. Students will be allowed to choose seats before they are assigned. quote, "We're going to get that put together, and then we'll hand it to the principals of the schools," he said. "If a student tests positive for COVID-19, the school will notify the parents of children in surrounding seats. About half of Cedar Falls students, or 2,800, are typically eligible to ride the bus based on how close they live to their school. Not everyone who is eligible uses the service, though, particularly at the high school. Quote, "Based on what we're seeing, I'm expecting the ridership to be down," said Blair. "About 600 students have opted out of the bus service, according to a district parent survey. A total of 955 students, some of whom may be bus riders in other years, are spending at least the first term learning online from home." Quote, "Just my gut tells me we'll be down 25% from past years," he added. Barrett expects to see a drop in how many of Waterloo School's 10,000 students will be transported as well. In past years, the company has driven an average of 6,000 students to and from school. About 20% of students, or roughly 2,000, are expected to start the year learning online, some of whom may not qualify to ride the bus. The number of parents who opted out of using the bus was not available. Quote, "The ridership is definitely down," he said. "The parents are definitely concerned about being that close on the buses." Joni Jackson, who is starting her eighth year driving a bus in the Waterloo District, is returning with mixed emotions, she said. "I enjoy driving the bus. I like going on the field trips, added Jackson, noting she is occasionally approached in the community by students who were formerly on her routes. I've seen these kids grow up." She supports the measures to keep everyone safe, from masks to disinfecting, as long as they help get students through the year. Quote, "Kids gotta have school," said Jackson, "rather than spending more time learning online at home." Quote, "They're too young for this. They still need to go to school." Iowa surpasses 1,000 COVID-related deaths. Posted by Aaron Murphy of the Courier Des Moines Bureau. Des Moines, Iowa has passed an unfortunate milestone with its 1,000th death as a result of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. The milestone was reported in state public health data Wednesday morning, almost 5 months after the first death was recorded in the state. Since that first death in Iowa, the state has averaged 6.7 new deaths reported per day, according to the state public health data compiled by the Des Moines Bureau. The deadliest days were May 22nd and 24th, when 19 Iowans died of COVID-related causes. Iowa's COVID deaths, hospitalization, and new cases all peaked in May, then dropped through late June. But all of those trend lines have been steadily increasing in the 2 months since. New cases and hospitalization admissions have surged to near their previous peaks. The state Wednesday said it has addressed a glitch in its reporting of test results. The Associated Press earlier this week reported that some test results among people who have been tested multiple times were mistakenly dated by their initial test. A spokesman for Governor Kim Reynolds' office said Wednesday that the data entry error is being fixed. With the adjustments, the overall rate of positive cases per total tests stayed the same at 9.4%. Nearly 80% of counties will see a decrease in their current 14-day positivity rate, and the other 20% of counties will see an average increase of less than 1% in their 14-day positivity rate, according to the governor's office. While those are the official numbers and irrefutable trends in Iowa right now, political leaders from the state expressed varied views of what those numbers mean. Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Mark Smith issued a statement Wednesday that included a scathing rebuke of Republican leaders' management of the pandemic nationally and in Iowa. Quote, "This morning, we woke up to a state where over 1,000 of our neighbors and fellow Iowans have died from COVID-19. Every single person that passed away left behind loved ones, family members, and a community that will never be the same, Smith said. Quote, it didn't have to be this bad, but our leaders failed us on every level imaginable. Donald Trump refused to take coronavirus seriously, offer resources to states, or follow CDC guidance while Kim Reynolds blindly followed in lockstep with his chaotic mishandling and refused to stand up for Iowans. While other countries have COVID-19 under control, the U.S. still has surging cases across the country because of Trump and the GOP's failed leadership. Iowans are tough, and we'll get through the coronavirus pandemic together, but we deserve better from our leaders, unquote. Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman responded by accusing Democrats of using the deaths of Iowans for political gain. Kaufman praised the testing program established by the state in a $26 million contract with a Utah-based private healthcare company and federal assistance in the form of medical equipment and financial aid for public health and business recovery. This attempt by the Iowa Democratic Party to score political points by using tragic deaths from this unprecedented pandemic is absolutely disgusting, Kaufman said in a statement. Quote, President Trump and Governor Reynolds have been steadfast in their commitment to keeping Iowans safe and healthy from day one, acting quickly and decisively to save lives. They have done an outstanding job getting necessary resources and leading Iowa through this crisis, unquote. Weekend homicide was part of a robbery, and one arrest has been made, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo, a Saturday night shooting that claimed the life of a Waterloo man, started as a robbery, according to court records. Police Tuesday arrested one person in connection with the heist. Waterloo police arrested Anna Helia Berenobos McLaremore, 24, of Elk Run Heights, on one count of first-degree robbery. Court records indicate others were involved in the robbery, which unfolded outside 556 Adrian Street and ended with the death of 49-year-old Vincent J. Hemingway. Police said the matter remains under investigation. Officers were called to report of gunfire at the Adrian Street home, where Hemingway had been hanging out with friends in the garage around 11:40 p.m. Saturday. Authorities found Hemingway on the ground with a gunshot wound, and he later died at a Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. Witnesses told police two men in masks came to the house, asked for a lighter, and then tried to take a lighter from one of the people. When the person resisted, one of the masked men drew a gun and fired several rounds into the group of people in the garage, striking Hemingway, according to court records. Detectives found a gun and a cell phone while searching the area, and they detained another person on unrelated charges, records the state. During the investigation, officers found phone messages showing plans made earlier in the day for robberies, including a robbery planned for the Adrian Street address, court records state. Other messages pertain to the aftermath of the robbery, records state. Police said GPS data place Berenobos McLaremore less than a block from the scene of the shooting. Trump, Pence, campaigns signal lax approach to virus, filed by the Associated Press. The story opens up with a photograph of a crowd of people, some of whom are wearing face masks, with the caption, "People applaud during a campaign rally for President Donald Trump on Tuesday in Yuma, Arizona." Des Moines. Sitting and standing shoulder to shoulder, some without face masks, hundreds of supporters of President Donald Trump jammed into an airplane hangar for an Arizona campaign event this week, ignoring the advice of Trump's own health experts. Like his boss, Vice President Mike Pence went maskless in Iowa last week as he reached across a barrier to autograph a half dozen familiar red Trump campaign hats, literally crossing the line of vulnerability outlined by the coronavirus task force he heads. The episodes, along with similar ones in New Jersey, Florida, and Wisconsin, project a confusing message to the public, even as Trump and Pence are trying to secure the confidence of Americans during a global pandemic and in the lead-up to the November election. Quote, it sends a mixed message. I think if you're making guidance for the general public, you should follow the guidance, said Dr. Amish Adalia, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Quote, the guidance they are putting out is very unambiguous about these types of situations. I do think they are undermining their own work, unquote. The White House says the president and vice president observe federal health guidelines as well as those in place in the states they visit. Trips are planned with input from the presidential medical staff, and the president, vice president, and senior staff are regularly tested. But in Wisconsin on Monday, Trump absolved his audience of health precautions along the way, mocking the racial justice protests he has railed against for weeks. In an aircraft hangar in Oshkosh, Trump flaunted violations of the state's distancing and masking guidelines, recommendations also promoted by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as he spoke to hundreds of supporters, most not wearing face coverings. Quote, this was supposed to be just a quick, small little gathering, Trump said, joking that we're supposed to have 50 people, right? We'll call it a peaceful protest. That way we can do whatever we want, Trump added. This is like a rally, Trump added, before telling supporters, quote, I hereby grant you a pardon, unquote. At Tuesday's similarly raucous rally in Yuma, Arizona, supporters sat on closely packed-in chairs and bleachers and stood on a balcony as they chanted, four more years, while the hangar was open on one side overlooking Air Force One on the same tarmac. It nonetheless felt stuffy inside in the stifling heat. Most in the crowd did wear official Trump and MAGA masks, though many did not. The event was one in a series of recent Trump and Pence campaign events where the candidates and their audiences at times took public health precautions lightly and at worst ignored them. On Wednesday, Pence addressed a crowd at a metal fabricating plant in Darien, Wisconsin, where the crowd stood and sat close together, many people not wearing masks, despite a statewide order requiring them indoors. The White House said it turned away about 200 people to keep the crowd to a certain size. Democratic potential candidate Joe Biden is painting Trump's public appearances as public health threats. As the Democratic National Convention gets underway this week, his campaign aired an ad connecting a spike in COVID-19 cases in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to the rally Trump headlined there in June. Pence wears a mask at times, as he did walking on stage in Des Moines, before pocketing it for the remainder of the appearance. Trump has worn one in public only a few times. Officials have repeatedly said the campaign encourages the use of masks. Quote, President Trump and Vice President Pence are safely hosting events that allow them to bring their message directly to the American people in several states across the country, said a campaign spokeswoman, Courtney Perella. The campaign maintains that its events are in line with local regulations. It isn't the president's and vice president's safety that's at risk, said Dr. Perry Haltikas, a public health psychologist and dean of the Rutgers University School of Public Health. They have top-notch care. They are being tested every day, Haltikas said. It's the people who are standing there, whether it's at Bedminster Golf Course or those at rallies next to each other, unquote. Earlier this month, Trump held two news conferences in front of country club members at his Bedminster Club in New Jersey. At one, he called suddenly on a Friday night. Club members, holding wine glasses, assembled, keeping no personal distance and, like Trump, not wearing masks. The gathering also exceeded the number of people allowed in an indoor space in New Jersey. During Pence's Des Moines event, chairs arranged in small clusters 6 feet apart were quickly abandoned, As many in the audience of about 200, few in masks, moved within a few inches of each other. Dozens crowded together afterward to get an autograph or a nod from Pence. We all have a role to play and continue to protect the vulnerable with the help of others first to save lives, unquote, Pence said during his speech. Quote, I know people of Iowa will do as you have done all along, put the health of others first, unquote. But the call to collectively fight the virus rang hollow to some, given the administration's inconsistent messaging. Rob Mudd, who drove 120 miles from Cedar Falls to see Pence, was among those not wearing a mask. Quote, is the disease real? Yes, said Mudd, 53. So is the fear-mongering, unquote. Turning now to the Cedar Valley page, mask mandate stalls in Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls. The City Council on Wednesday put on hold a mask mandate that was patterned after one adopted this week in Waterloo. Council members voted 6-1 to indefinitely postpone the resolution during the special meeting following 2 hours of discussion and public comment. Council member Kelly Dunn, a registered nurse, dissented. For me, this is a public health issue, and we need to treat it as such, she said. Wearing masks or other face coverings is intended to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus, which causes the respiratory disease COVID-19. But other council members voiced concern with enforcement of the resolution and how it would impact businesses, as some store owners called on them to vote it down. The measure would have required wearing a mask covering indoors, with some exceptions, and outside if it weren't possible to keep a 6-foot distance from others. If there's no way to enforce this resolution, what's the point? Asked council member Simon Harding, who noted that he regularly wears a mask in public. The special meeting was requested through the council's referral process at the end of Monday's regular council meeting. The Waterloo City Council has approved its resolution earlier in the evening, and the majority of the Cedar Falls Council agreed to hold the special meeting to discuss a similar mandate. A total of 17 community members weighed in on the issue during public comment, voicing both support and opposition. A number of business owners who said many of their customers and employees wear masks in their stores were among those opposing the mandate. I'm not anti-mask, I'm anti-telling people what to do, said Jenny Begenstoss, owner of downtown business, Here's What's Poppin'. I want all people to come in and feel welcome. Catherine Zeman, a professor of environmental health science at the University of Northern Iowa, supported the resolution. She noted that COVID-19 has become the third leading cause of death in our country during the past 6 months. While the World Health Organization recommends testing positivity rate of under 5% for 2 weeks before relaxing restrictions, we're at 9%, or a little higher today, in Black Hawk County, she said. So I think for a short period of time, this is something we should consider doing. Black Hawk County's Public Health Department is working on a potential countywide mask mandate, and Director Nafisa Shisi Iboigne was invited to address the council. She downplayed the enforcement aspect of a mandate in her comments. Quote, I think one of the things that we have to take into account, it's more along the line of education and compliance, she said, with a mandate helps to accomplish. Having that universal message is going to be key. That provides space for public safety officials to participate in an educational push. Quote, I'm not expecting law enforcement to be going out and ticketing, said Sissy Eboigne. Some council members liked the idea of a focus on educating the public, but were sensitive to residents' concerns with a mandate. Several suggested modifying the resolution's language to a recommendation. An amendment was put forward and seconded. Council member Mark Miller said it was important for governmental agencies to have conversations on the topic, but added he was not ready to mandate masks. After further discussion, the motion to amend the original resolution was withdrawn. Council members were advised by the city attorney if they didn't want to act now, but still have the option to revisit a mandate later, they should indefinitely postpone the resolution. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Thursday, August 20th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. James E. Haig, 89, of Waverly, passed away on Tuesday, August 18, 2020, at the Bartels Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly. James Edward Haig was born on November 23, 1930, the son of Louis and Marie Haig in Sumner, Iowa. He graduated from Sumner High School in 1950. On May 25, 1958, he was united in marriage with Carolyn C. Campman at St. James Lutheran Church in Allison. After their marriage, the couple made their home in Sumner, where they farmed. Jim also worked at several businesses in the Sumner area. In 1970, the couple moved to Waverly, where Jim worked for Carnation until retiring in 2000. He was a member of St. Paul's Lutheran Church and the Wapsie Valley Good Sam's Camping Club. He enjoyed camping, trout fishing, playing cards, music, but most especially attending his grandchildren's events. Private family funeral services will be held Saturday, August 22, 2020, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Waverly, with Pastor Arthur Bergrin officiating and live-streamed on Kaiser Corson Facebook page. Public visitation will be held on Friday from 4 o'clock p.m. until 7 o'clock p.m. at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly. Burial will be in Harlington Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to either Cedar Valley Hospice or St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School, and online condolences for James can be left at www.kaisercorson.com. James R. Jim Prenz, 65, of West Des Moines, formerly of Waterloo, died Saturday, August 15th, at Mercy One West Des Moines Medical Center. He was born March 12, 1955, in Waterloo, to Robert and Ruth Schroeder Prenz. He graduated from ISU with a bachelor's in political science, and from Drake University with a master's in business administration. Jim worked at MidAmerican Energy for over 36 years, retiring as an inspector in 2010. He married Maria Patty Fernandez Salazar January 7, 1983, in Ames, and then married with a church ceremony at College Hill Lutheran Church March 12, 1983, in Cedar Falls. Jim loved to cook, read, and political discussions. Services at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd, at Locke Funeral Home, with an hour of visitation before services. Burial in Garden of Memories Cemetery. Memorials to the family or Ascension Lutheran Church, Waterloo. Visit www.lockfuneralhome.com for more information. Richard Kubu, 76, of Cleveland Heights, Ohio, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died unexpectedly on Sunday, August 16, 2020. Rich was born September 13, 1943, at home on a family farm in Dysart, Iowa, the son of Leander and Mary Kubu. He was raised and educated in the Dysart community, living on a farm southeast of town. He graduated from Dysart High School in the class of 1962 and continued his education at the American Institute of Business in Des Moines. On April 25, 1964, he was united in marriage with Judy Hook in Des Moines. They made their home in Cedar Rapids, where he began his well-respected career and worked for Wilson and Company, and later as a feed broker at Jones and Kuntz Company, until moving to Winona, Minnesota in 1991, where Rich worked for La Crosse Milling. In 2000, Rich and Judy moved to Sandusky, Ohio, where he worked for Hanson Mueller until his retirement in 2013. After his retirement, he moved to Cleveland Heights, Ohio, with Andrea Morris, and they spent a majority of their time traveling extensively and visiting friends and family. Rich will be remembered as a hard-working father and fun-loving grandfather who always had a funny one-liner ready. In his younger years, he enjoyed golf and fishing and was an avid pickleball player after he retired. He enjoyed traveling, playing cards, walking his dog, Arlo, any sort of home improvement, and was an all-around jack-of-all-trades who could fix anything with a pen cap. Memorials may be directed to the family, Post Office Box 1545, Big Timber, Montana, 59011. Visitation will be held at Overton Funeral Home in Traer on Friday, August 21st, from 1 to 3 p.m. Friends may call from 1 to 3 p.m. on Friday at Overton Funeral Home in Traer. Overton Funeral Home in Dysart is in charge of arrangements. Area code 319-476-7355. Condolences may be left at www.overtonfuneralhomes.com. Turning now to sports, Mississippi Valley Conference athletic directors hard at work to create safe environment for all, filed by Jim Nelson. And it opens with a picture of football players, one of whom is getting tackled, and the caption is, "Waterloo East's Alexander Glover is tackled by Waterloo West's DeQuavion Walker during last season's 107th meeting between the two rivals at Memorial Stadium." The sun came up again Wednesday, and for 16 athletic directors of the Mississippi Valley Conference, it was another long day plugging away in the face of a pandemic and the aftermath of a derecho. After a spring and summer full of virtual meetings between the conference administrators, Wednesday's in-person meeting at the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum in Waterloo saw a lot of work completed, with yet more to accomplish. Quote, "It was our back-to-school meeting," said MVC Athletic Director Chair Rocky Bennett of Cedar Rapids Prairie. While there was the regular to-do stuff, such as medals for divisional golf and cross-country meets, and scheduling tweaks, Bennett said administrators also dove deeper into their COVID-19 discussion. "What are we going to do for our particular venues when it comes to fans and social distancing?" Bennett asked. "We are talking about how that needs to look in the activity arena. Almost all venues will scale back fan attendance to 50%, and it was decided unanimously that masks will be mandatory at all events for fans. It was the hope of the administrators to have a unified plan for its venues, but Cedar Rapids Kennedy's Aaron Stecker said it is not as straightforward as it sounds. Quote, "I think by sport our venues are so different," Stecker said. "You think about Kingston Stadium, and it can hold 10,000. We don't typically draw 10,000 fans, so do we have to restrict or just encourage social distancing? Whereas you get to smaller stadiums, and they may have to say, we can't have more than 2,000 in here. We can't space out 2,000 people that way." Quote, "Gyms are different sized. As much as we can unify things, we will, but 50% capacity at a school might be different than at school B." Waterloo announced Monday it is limiting capacity to 50%, 2,500, for the 108th football meeting between Waterloo East and Waterloo West next Friday at Memorial Stadium. East, the home team, has been allotted 1,500 tickets, and 1,000 have been allotted to West for the much smaller visitor section of the stadium. All tickets will be advance purchase. No tickets will be sold at the door. Everyone will be required to wear a face covering at all times, with the exception of fans who are seated and eating. Seating will be limited to every other row, and fans will be required to practice social distancing. Quote, it really has been a challenge to put things in place to provide the safest environment so our kids can play, Waterloo East Director of Athletics Tim Moses said. It has been overwhelming, but I think collectively we are really putting some strong guidelines and protocols in place that I think will provide our safest environment. Our mantra has kind of been, do the next right thing, added Bennett. It goes back to May 15 when the governor said we are playing baseball and softball. This group is a tremendous group of people. We have a sincere passion for the kids. We did a lot of work. We all just mentioned it today. The silver lining for us in our mantra going through the summer is if we can do this successfully, that hopefully will pave the way to do it again in the fall. The MVC and each individual institution will be rolling out its COVID-19 safety procedures in the upcoming days. During the August 10th derecho, Kennedy suffered a significant roof damage over its main gym and the middle section of its building, leading to major water damage to its main gym floor. Additionally, many of the school's outdoor practice facilities suffered significant damage. Quote, they were getting in there, and hopefully by the end of the week or early next week, we have a full assessment, Stecker said. But it could be months before we are back in that building. In the meantime, the Cougar football team is sharing practice opportunities at Kingston Stadium with the teams from Jefferson and Washington. Kennedy's volleyball team is renting space from a local volleyball club. The Linmar School District has graciously opened the doors of its aquatic center for the girls' swim team to practice. The cross-country teams have moved their base of operations to Noel Ridge Park. Quote, we won't be hosting a lot of things at Kennedy High School, Stecker said. We may play most of our volleyball matches on the road, and most of our swim meets will be on the road. The Cougars may lose a couple of scheduled events early next week when the fall slate starts in earnest because of either a lack of venue to move to or limited practice time. Stecker said he and his fellow Cedar Rapids athletic administrators are all in it to provide opportunities for their student athletes. The right answer is, hey, wake up every day and keep plugging away. And that is what we are doing, Stecker said. I think everybody in education, anything, if they said they were rolling along with no problems, they wouldn't be telling the truth. Quote, it's a physical toll, an emotional toll, because you want to create opportunities for kids. You want to create opportunities for families to have a great experience. How do you do that and do it safely is the big question, and we're trying to answer that and do it as well as we can do it. Quote, but yes, I'm tired of COVID-19. I'm tired of derecho. I think most folks are. But at the same time, the sun comes up, and it is what we can do today to provide opportunities for kids. Wednesday's baseball games, this summary posted by the Associated Press. Chicago, David Bote hit a tie-breaking two-run single in the seventh and final inning. Adbert Alzolay pitched five solid innings in his first start of the season, and the Chicago Cubs beat the St. Louis Cardinals 4-2 on Wednesday to split a doubleheader. In the opener, Matt Carpenter belted a first-inning grand slam, and the Cardinals beat the Cubs 9-3. St. Louis held Chicago to two hits in the seven-inning game, even though shaky starter Jack Flaherty only recorded five outs. Royals 4, Reds 0 first game, and Reds 5, Royals 0 in the second game. Kansas City's Brad Keller pitched hitless ball into the sixth inning to beat visiting Cincinnati in the first game of a doubleheader. Keller hasn't permitted a run in 17 and two-thirds innings this season after coming back from a positive test for COVID-19. Reds starter Trevor Bauer was equally dominant in the nightcap, striking out 9 in a one-hitter. Rays 4, Yankees 2. Pitch hitter Mike Brosseau singled home the tie-breaking run in the 8th inning as Tampa Bay won the New York again. Yankees starter Gerrit Cole got a no decision, keeping his 20-game regular season winning streak intact. Red Sox 6, Phillies 3. Boston ended its 9-game losing streak with Rafael Devers homering and driving in 3 runs in a home victory over Philadelphia. Blue Jays 5, Orioles 2. Randall Grichuk homered twice as Toronto won in Baltimore to complete a 3-game sweep. Grichuk has homered in 4 straight starts. Indians 6, Pirates 1. Aaron Civale struck out 6 and didn't issue a walk in his first career complete game as Cleveland won in Pittsburgh for its 5th straight victory. Carlos Santana broke open a scoreless game with a 3-run homer in the 6th inning. Mets 5, Marlins 3. Michael Conforto hit a tie-breaking 2-run homer in the 9th inning of New York's victory in Miami. Jacob deGrom pitched 6 shutout innings. White Sox 5, Tigers 3. Jose Abreu hit a tie-breaking homer in the 8th inning, and Edwin Encarnacion followed with his 2nd solo shot of the game to lift Chicago past visiting Detroit. Brewers 9, Twins 3. Christian Yelich hit one of Milwaukee's 4 homers, and Brett Anderson pitched 6 strong innings to beat Minnesota in Minneapolis. Astros 13, Rockies 6. Kyle Tucker homered, hit 2 triples, and drove in 4 runs to power Houston past Colorado in Denver. Carlos Correa, who also went deep and had 3 of the Astros' season-high 20 hits. Athletics 4, Diamondbacks 1. Mark Canha hit a 2-run homer, and Robbie Grossman got things going with a 2-run double in the 1st to back Jesus Luzardo in Oakland's home victory over Phoenix. Padres 6, Rangers 3. Manny Machado launched a walk-off grand slam off the fencing of the upper deck in left field to win it for San Diego after Texas broke a 2-2 tie with a run in the top of the 10th. Padres slugger Fernando Tatis Jr. homered in the 3rd inning, his 12th. Let's read a couple more articles from the Cedar Valley page. Auditor, multiple ballot request forms, no problem. This story filed by Courier staff. Waterloo. Voters are receiving absentee ballot request forms from a variety of sources. Not to worry, said County Auditor Grant Veder. Just choose one and mail it in. Veder said people have received multiple request forms in past elections, but this year is different because the COVID-19 pandemic has led to forms being sent out by state and local governments. Quote, we sent request forms to all active registered voters in Black Hawk County for the November 3rd general election, he said in a news release. But a request form sent by a private organization is just as valid as long as it is addressed to our office at 316 East 5th Street in Waterloo, unquote. To date, the County Election Office is aware of request forms originating from the Center for Voter Information and the Republican Party of Iowa. In addition to the county's mailing, the Iowa Secretary of State office plans to send forms at the end of August, and additional mailings can be expected from political parties and possibly other organizations, said Veder. People may accidentally send in more than one request, but no matter how many requests we receive, we'll only send you one ballot, he said. the ballot request forms sent in Black Hawk County are not subject to the Trump campaign's lawsuit over pre-populated request forms was filed in Lynn, Johnson, and Woodbury counties. None of the forms sent in Black Hawk contain the voter's identification number, which is the action in dispute. Ballots will not be ready until October 5th, but Veeder encourages voters to send in their ballot requests and their ballots when ready as soon as possible. Quote, "We have been assured that our local mail will function with its traditional efficiency," he said, "but the uncertainties circulating around the mail make it prudent to take care of this business as soon as possible rather than later," he said. Veeder emphasized, no matter how many people vote by mail, there will still be election November 3rd. Quote, "It would take an act of Congress to change the election date, and no one expects that. For questions, contact the election office at this phone number, 833-3007, or election@co.black-hawk.iowa.us. I'll repeat that phone number, 833-3007. Woman sentenced to prison in 2019 home invasion, Waterloo. A Waterloo woman has been sentenced to prison for her role in a 2019 home invasion in which a man was shot. Cassandra Don Wright, 37, on Wednesday pleaded to reduce charges of second-degree burglary, intimidation with a weapon, and assault while participating in a felony. She was sentenced to up to 15 years in prison under a plea agreement that included victim restitution and an arrangement to run the time concurrent with a parole violation for an unrelated drug case. Wright told the court she and her attorney had discussed the defense that she was on drugs and mental health medication at the time of the crime, but she ultimately decided to plead to the charges. Prosecutors said Wright herself didn't use a gun during the incident, but played a supporting role in the crime. Authorities said Wright and three others forced their way into a house in the 500 block of Western Avenue on October 21st. A struggle broke out with the resident, and one of the intruders fired a shot that grazed the resident's face. Police arrived and found two of the suspects, James Welton and Larry Clayton, hiding inside the home. Wright and Joshua Bo Truax fled and were arrested later. Police said Truax was armed with a stolen AR-15-style rifle, and Welton was carrying a stolen 9mm pistol during the burglary. Truax and Welton pleaded to federal firearms charges in the incident and are awaiting sentencing. Clayton earlier pleaded to second-degree burglary and intimidation with a weapon in state court and was sentenced to two concurrent 10-year prison sentences. Pelosi, DeJoy won't restore cuts to USPS. Service delays spur warnings Trump trying to slow mail voting. Filed by the Associated Press. Washington, the Postal Service faced more questions in a federal lawsuit Wednesday over mail disruptions, despite assurances by President Donald Trump's Postmaster General of no more service changes until after the November election, a pledge he made only after public outcry. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Postmaster General Louis DeJoy told her he has no intention of restoring removed blue mailboxes or sorting equipment, and no plans for employee overtime. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer said officials are withholding information about DeJoy's selection to the job. With the agency in turmoil, civil and voting rights advocates are suing to bring mail operations back to normal. Pelosi, a Democrat from California, said she told DeJoy in a phone call that his decision for a temporary pause was, quote, wholly insufficient. The uproar over the Postal Service is expected to spill out Friday as DeJoy testifies before Senate, and Saturday as the House convenes for a rare session. The House is set to vote on legislation to reverse the service changes and provide $25 billion. Widespread mail disruptions have led to warnings that Trump is trying to undermine the Postal Service as he rails against mail-in ballots, just as millions of people are trying to vote absentee to avoid polling places during the COVID-19 crisis. Ex-FBI lawyer admits to lying in Washington. A former FBI lawyer pleaded guilty Wednesday to altering a document related to the secret surveillance of a former Trump campaign advisor during the Russia investigation. Kevin Kleinsmith is the first current or former official to be charged in a special Justice Department review of the investigation into ties between Russia and Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. Attorney General William Barr appointed John Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, to scrutinize decisions made by officials during that probe. Kleinsmith pleaded guilty via audio conference to a single false statement charge, admitting that he doctored an email that the FBI relied on as it sought court approval to eavesdrop on former Trump campaign aide Carter Page in 2017. The sentencing guideline calls for 0 to 6 months in prison. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Thursday, August 20th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thanks so much for listening today.